If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. Answer one important question. How did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to have to talk about foreign policy today. Yes, I will very briefly address that shooting. We have a January 6th lawyer here. We got all kinds of stuff coming up tonight on I'm Right. All right, let me burst your bubble. Or maybe it'll make you feel good, but either way, let me give it to you honestly, as we always do here on I'm Right. I'm aware of the mass shooting today in Nashville. I'm well aware of it. I know what happened. We don't do mass shooting television here on I'm Right. We have never, and we will never. And for you new viewers, allow me to explain why we don't do mass shooting television here. I care very deeply, you care very deeply about this nation and the issues we face and life and all these other things. But I'm going to do the best I can to never, ever, ever get to a place where I forget humanity. Meaning this, when parents, I'm a parent, I have 2 sons, 12 and 14. They're everything to me. As a parent, if you're a parent watching this, you understand exactly what I'm about to say. While I'm not a paranoid or anxious person, every parent briefly every now and then thinks about that phone call. That phone call that you pray never, ever, ever comes. Jesse, there's been an accident. Jesse, there's been a shooting. Jesse, something terrible has happened. And you're never going to see your little buddies again. You will never see me again if that day ever comes for me. I'll just lay down and die. There are parents going through that today. So while parents are going through that today, we're not going to come to a television show and stand on top of the dead bodies and politic. We don't do it. I will not do it. I will never do it. This gun lobbyist that did it today, the left does this all the time. Look how this person looks. Imagine when I show you this video, imagine you're a parent today who just got that phone call. Or maybe you're tuning into a press conference finding out if your child was shot and you don't even know yet. Imagine watching this and you see this.
Aren't you guys tired of covering this? Aren't you guys tired of being here and having to cover all of these mass shootings? I'm from Highland Park, Illinois. My son and I survived a mass shooting over the summer. I am in Tennessee on a family vacation with my son, visiting my sister-in-law. I have been lobbying in D.C. since we survived a mass shooting in July. I have met with over 130 lawmakers. How is this still happening? How are our children still dying, and why are we failing them? Gun violence is the number one killer of children and teens. It has overtaken cars. Assault weapons are contributing to the border crisis and fentanyl. We are arming cartels with our guns and our loose gun laws. And these shootings and these mass shootings will continue to happen until our lawmakers step up and pass gun safety legislation.
Yeah. We got it. Enough. How's that person look? You know how they look. If you're that parent with that phone call, person looks like an anti-human monster. We're not doing that on the show. We pray. Pray for your family. Pray for those families, those children. They're going through more devastation than we can imagine right now. In the wake of something terrible happening as a nation should come together and pray. And we won't be part of the anti-human monsters who try to use this for their own agenda. Now let's move on and talk about other things. Let's talk about, you know what? I just brought up prayer. So I think now is an interesting time to bring something up. Just stay with me here. Do you know, have you ever heard about that story in the Bible where Paul, the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, just stay with me, I'm going somewhere with this, where Apostle Paul, where he gets arrested and they're beating him up and whatnot, and Paul at some point in time looks at them and says, looks at the authorities who arrested him and says, hey, you gonna do this to a Roman citizen? You remember what the authorities did? They freaked. Oh, gosh. Oh, geez. He's a Roman citizen. Oh, no. Hey, Paul, do you need a powdered donut for you? Tell us what we can do. Now, why? Why'd that happen? Well, here's why. At various points in time throughout history, there are nations, empires, who become number one in the world, most powerful in the world. And almost universally, if you are the number one nation in the world, the most powerful in the world, you will, part of the benefit of that is you will use that power to let the other nations in the world know, hey, my citizens, hands off. Don't touch my citizens. If you touch my citizens, we will come touch you. And that's why Roman citizens, especially at the height of Roman power, enjoyed an absurd amount of safety when they traveled abroad. You didn't want to be the country where some Roman citizen had something terrible happen to them in their town. You might look outside your walls and see a Roman army there in 6 months from now. There's the Mongols, too. Once the Mongols had everything, if you were a Mongolian citizen, woohoo, you were treated like a king everywhere. Because that's how you can tell. It's one of the indicators where you can tell if you're one of the most powerful nations on earth. If you're still a powerful empire, other nations will leave your people be. Which brings us to where we are as a nation. We have a U.S. contractor killed in Syria. The Iranians did it. We have United States of America military personnel injured in that same drone strike in Syria. We apparently retaliated with some, quote, precision strikes. That's, of course, what they told us. I can't help but wonder what kind of precision strikes we use, considering the last time we retaliated against somebody after they killed some of our people. We drone strike 10 innocent people in Afghanistan, including 6 children. But either way, this comes on the heels of us finding out these Iranian drone strikes. This wasn't some one-off thing. This is just something they do regularly now. Wrap your mind, just pause on everything else for a moment, all this other news, and pause on what that means for you, on what that means for us as a nation. Iran, they regularly attempt to kill American citizens. Look, I don't have to talk about anything else. Do you understand what that means for us as a nation? That Iran would not only do this, they've moved past the doing it in secret phase. They do it right out in the open. What do you think that means for us? Why do you think the wolves are on the move? Why do you think Vladimir Putin's putting nukes in Belarus? Why do you think the Chinese are about 5 minutes away from taking over Taiwan? What does all this mean? How do we unpack it? Why is everybody moving? China's forming these huge alliances with Russia and Korea and Iran, and Saudi Arabia. And why are all these things happening? Well, the flip side of that Apostle Paul story is this. Imagine this. Imagine Apostle Paul gets arrested. They're beating him up a little bit. And Apostle Paul says, hey, you're going to do that to a Roman citizen? And they look at him. And then they start looking at each other and they start laughing. A Roman citizen? What does that matter? What's Rome going to do, Paul? Well, don't laugh, because that's what the nations of the world think when the president of the United States of America, well, is this.
Significantly expanded our alliances.
What do they think of us? Well, I actually think we should go to one of our allies. Well, probably former allies, now that Joe Biden has made them angry with us. Let's see what Saudi Arabia thinks of our president. But hey, it's not like that's a big deal, right? We're just talking about nuclear war. We're talking about the dollar being the standard of the world. We're talking about America's standing. I don't understand why anyone would focus on little things like that when we have diversity to worry about.
The budget will advance our efforts to modernize the State Department, including by expanding our training float, updating our technology, carrying out diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility initiatives, including to make our overseas missions more accessible.
You see the new Army ad? Speaking of more diverse, you see the ads the military's putting out? Here's the latest one.
What does it mean when people say America is a land of opportunity?
It means we strive to be a nation of limitless possibilities.
Exploring those possibilities isn't just an inclination.
It's our greatest strength, the power to discover.
To redefine yourself.
To improve yourself.
To challenge yourself.
To challenge yourself.
To challenge yourself.
To realize there's more in you
than you ever knew
that you could do.
To be all you can be.
Yeah, we're doing well. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Former Green Beret, current and former congressional candidate Joe Kent is going to join us next. He always has some very frank things to say about that. Now, as our wonderful republic goes through some times, some rocky times, let's do remember that we have an obligation to the ones who fought for it, to the ones who gave up so much for it. And thankfully, we have this alternate economy that has popped up in this country that allows us to purchase goods and services we already want while doing good. I love that part of it. I love Bone Frog Coffee. Bone Frog Coffee, founded by a Navy SEAL. The Bone Frog itself is the symbol, one of the symbols of fallen Navy SEALs who've given it all. 10% of the proceeds go to various Navy SEAL foundations. Oh, and did I mention best cup of coffee ever? You've heard of Seattle's best coffee? Yeah, one of the founders creates the Bone Frog blends. There's a reason everyone raves about it. 10% off subscription. Get a subscription. Feel good about that cup of joe you drink every single morning. BoneFrogCoffee.com, promo code Jesse. 10% off subscriptions. BoneFrogCoffee.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
And we have maintained the ability to have an over-the-horizon capability to take them out. We don't have military in Syria.
Don't have military in Syria? Oh, that's news to me. I had no idea. I wonder if Joe knew. Joining me now, Joe Kent, former Green Beret, current congressional candidate in Washington. He's going to win this time. Joe, I don't know if you knew, buddy. I know you're CIA and Green Beret type. We don't have troops in Syria. That's exciting.
Yeah, that's news to the family who just received the tragic news that their loved one was killed defending one of our bases, and all the service members who just got evacuated after the Iranian drone attack there. So this just is another disaster under Joe Biden.
Joe, will you explain to people who really don't know anything about this world, why did a contractor die? What's a contractor? Is he over there building schools? What? Why did he die?
Yeah, I mean, contractor is actually a pretty widely used term that can mean a wide variety of things. I believe that this gentleman that we're talking about was a contractor that was servicing some of the air defense fortifications we have on our bases over there, but it can mean anything from a guy who's carrying a rifle doing the same duties as a soldier all the way to somebody who is serving in a more support role like this gentleman was, or doing food services or advising, you know, whatever government that we are trying to install at the time.
Why do we have troops in Syria? What's Syria to us? Explain it to me.
Yeah, that's the question. I don't think that we have any more vital national security interest inside Syria. A long time ago, when ISIS had taken over large swaths of Syria and Iraq, we put a limited number of special operators into Syria to take out the Islamic Caliphate. President Trump clearly defined that as all the ground that the Islamic Caliphate, ISIS, controlled at the time. We accomplished that mission in December of 2018. Attempted the first time. Tragically, my late wife was killed with three other Americans in Manbij, Syria, just a month after that, because the administrative state, the DOD, unelected bureaucrats drug their feet and they wanted to stay in Syria. And unfortunately, they got their way with the backing of Congress at the time to leave our troops there with no clear mission. And now they're caught in this six-sided civil war. If you add it up right, there's Assad and Iran that are working with the Russians to keep Assad in power. And then on the other side, you have the remnants of the Islamic Caliphate, some form of a Sunni resistance group working against Assad. But you also have the Turks that are at war with the Kurds, who are we are helping out as well. So there's really no vital national security interest left in Syria. We're there because the military-industrial complex has a good thing going, and they don't want to let it go. And there's even some crazy people in the national defense apparatus that still want to topple the regime of Assad because, you know, regime change works out so well when we do it.
Yeah, well, it worked out in Libya, worked out in Iraq. Of course it'll work out well in Syria. Joe, can you help me understand this? Iranian-backed militias. Who are they? Why are they attacking us? Why is Iran backing them? Why are we not killing them? What's going on here?
This is probably the least reported but most tragic part of the story. The Iranian-backed militias are over there to bolster Assad. Assad and Iran have been longtime allies. However, the Iranian-backed militias, it sounds like a ragtag group of guys that are, you know, sympathetic to Iran that happen to be in Syria. This is not the case. When ISIS came and took over large swaths of Iraq and Syria, they defeated large parts of the Iraqi army that we spent well over $1 trillion and lost nearly 5,000 Americans building. That Iraqi army threw its weapons on the ground for the most part, handed them over to ISIS. Oh. Now, the Iraqi government was heavily propped up by Iran, and they're the ones who came in with our backing. We're the ones that paid for the Iranians to be the winners in Iraq. And so the Iranian militias are largely funded by the Iraqi government that we pick up the bill for. So we are funding the exact same terrorists that are killing our troops.
Oh, you can't write this stuff. Okay, well, let's move on to other horrible parts of the world. Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin are getting together to do what exactly, Joe? What does this mean to us? Anything? Everything?
Yeah, this could mean everything. It doesn't mean anything good for us. I mean, you don't have to understand geopolitics at a high level to just take a look at a map and know that it's going to be a bad thing when Russia and China gang up on the rest of the world. That's the world's second biggest economy with one of the world's biggest nuclear powers and energy exporters. And so they got together, they're forming an alliance, they're bringing Iran, Saudi Arabia, members of OPEC into this alliance, and they're creating an alternative to the dollar. China is working on replacing us as the world's sole superpower. So Xi has said he is working on a ceasefire between Ukraine and between Russia. Of course, we've said this ceasefire is completely and totally unacceptable, but I don't think anybody really cares what we have to say anymore. We've already got the Saudis and the Iranians saying that they will accept payment for Petro in yuan, the Chinese currency. So we're seeing a massive consolidation right now of a of economic powers that could undermine our status as the prime reserve currency holder. Meanwhile, we continue to spend trillions and trillions of dollars that we just simply don't have. And Xi is poised to take down our status, or at least erode our status of the dollar. Even if he just erodes it, that could have catastrophic consequences to our economy right here at home.
What consequences?
Well, the only reason that we're able to continue to print and borrow so much money is because the dollar is the prime reserve currency holder. Every bank throughout the world has to back up their currency with the dollar. They have to do all their trading internationally with the dollar. If the yuan takes away that status, then the dollar really quickly, almost overnight, could become much less than it is right now. So we could see a massive lack of confidence in our banking system. And that's basically all we have. We don't make things here anymore in the United States. We don't produce our own energy anymore. We rely 110% on the entire world to do all their transactions in the dollar. If half of the world switches over to the yuan, or at least a large swath of Eurasia and OPEC, I mean, the petrodollar has kept the US dollar afloat. The Saudis have already said they're okay with China buying oil in the yuan. That's going to start taking away the value of the petrodollar. So our ability to run the economy as we know it right now, that is seriously on the line right now. And we're really doing all of this just because we decided to throw this draconian sanctions package at Russia and continue to escalate towards World War III with Ukraine. At the end of the day, we need the American people to ask their leaders, like, hey, are you going to ask us about this? Because I don't think it's good with most American people that we are willing to take such massive risks just for the border of Ukraine. We feel for the Ukrainian people. However, this is not worth World War III or crashing our currency.
Okay, on that note, we have a military recruitment crisis. There are a variety of reasons for this, from medical, because every daggone kid today is on ADHD medication, to physical, these kids can't throw a baseball or walk a mile without sucking wind, to the fact that rural parents, especially people with traditional values, don't want their child to go fight and die for the U.S. of gay. Either way, we have a huge recruitment crisis. So if World War III breaks out, exactly how do they merge those worlds, Joe?
That's going to be yet another crisis, as if we didn't have enough. But the tool in that toolbox is the draft. And so this is what the American people need to realize. Yeah, we were able to fight the war on terror, our longest war. We were able to fight that with an all-volunteer force because people were still joining the military. There was a high degree of patriotism. We had a little bit more physically fit of a population. However, right now, that population of folks, by and large, conservative-leaning people from the red parts of the country who joined the military, they've been completely and totally alienated for the last 3 years by this administration. And like you said, go figure, now they're not sending their sons and daughters off to volunteer. So as we have all these emerging crises throughout the world, people need to understand that if things go sideways, the Selective Service is a very real thing. Your sons and potentially even your daughters, if the Democrats get their way, they will call on them to go fight and die in these wars.
Yeah, the wild times. Joe, give out your website, please. We want you to win next time.
Thank you very much. Yep, JoeKentForCongress.com is the place to go. Anything that folks can give to support us is going to help us push back against the Democrat machine and hopefully correct the course that we're on right now. JoeKentForCongress.com.
JoeKentForCongress.com. Thank you, brother.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right. We're going to talk about the most dangerous people on the planet next. Do you know who it is? I'm not going to tell you. I promise it's not the one you're thinking about. Who's the most dangerous group of people on the planet? I'll tell you in a moment. Before we get to that, look, part of the reason we have a recruiting crisis in this nation, on top of all the woke garbage and everything else, is a physical problem. Guys can't make it. We have a testosterone crisis in this country, and I need you to hear me here. What's happening with testosterone in America will end the United States of America. How do I know this? Well, picture this. This is a fact that I'm about to tell you. Testosterone levels have dropped 50%, 50% in about 50 years. So fast forward another 50 years. The nation won't survive. You simply won't have enough people reproducing the nation. It is the end of America. You could argue, on top of everything else, voting, everything else, you could argue chalk is doing as much to save this country as anyone else. One, it's not injections, no more big pharma stuff. Stop sticking needles in your arm. Natural herbal supplements. They offer things like the Male Vitality Stack. 20% increase in your testosterone in 90 days. Female Vitality Stack for the ladies. But endless natural herbal supplement selections out there. All 35% off when you get a subscription to them. Natural. That is our way forward. Plus, we get to support the anti-communists at CHOQ. I love these guys, man. They're our people. CHOQ.com, promo code Jesse, all right? We'll be back. Who are the most dangerous people on the planet? There's a lot of them, aren't there? You got ISIS, you got feminists, you got all kinds of dangerous people out there. But who are the most dangerous people on the planet? Well, it's going to sound weird, but the true monsters out there, it's the guy driving around with the Go Green bumper sticker on. It's the guy obsessed about climate change, global, let's be kind to our planet. We're gonna reduce carbon. They sound so nice, don't they? Don't they sound like they care so much? They just sound so caring and nice, and they just want to save Mother Earth or whatever they call this place. But the truth is this. The Green Movement, they've actually written this down at several times throughout their movement. Their goal is the depopulation of the planet. They think you and me, the air we breathe out is poison. They want us to stop doing it. And they want billions of people to die. They've said on camera over and over and over again, there needs to be a massive reduction in the Earth's population. You understand that when we think about historical monsters, Mao and Hitler and Stalin and all these guys, we think about the body counts, 40 million here, 40 million there. Oh my gosh, it's terrible. You understand that that going green Aunt Peggy of yours, that if she has her way, she'll kill millions, billions more than Hitler, Mao, and Stalin combined. You realize that? It's a fact. You think the monster of this generation is some serial killer. Our monsters don't look like that. Our monsters look like this.
Private aviation is an example of something where people are starting to pay more attention. And but when you know, people who go to Davos to talk about climate change fly private, it seems like they don't want to make...
Well, they actually, I've talked to them about it. They offset. They buy offsets, they offset, and they are working harder than most people I know to be able to try to affect this transition.
Right.
Aviation.
Oh, but they offset. Well, of course, we're not going to fly Southwest with the peasants. Oh, no. You need to die. That guy there is going to be just fine. Monsters. All right. Let's get an update on the January 6th people. Before we get to that, you know about the banks. You know that now this whole bank financial system collapses, moved to Germany. I know you've seen all the news. None of this is new. But the most frustrating part about all of it, inflation and interest rates, is how helpless you feel, how helpless I feel. Wake up in the morning and your dollar's worth less and interest rates have gone up and everything's going down around you. What are you supposed to do? You're not the government. You're not the Fed. All you can do is look out for you. Protect the money you've worked hard for. The only way to do that is with gold and silver, with precious metals. Fortify your 401k. Fortify your IRA. Get gold and silver coins in your hand. Oh, Jesse, that sounds confusing. I agree, because I don't understand how to do all that. What do I? I don't know what to do. That's why I have Oxford Gold. I make a phone call. They make everything easy. They're completely laid back. It's not some hardcore sales pitch. But man, you don't have 6 months. I don't have 6 months. You don't have a year. We don't have time anymore. The bubble's bursting. Call 833-995-GOLD, all right? 833-995-GOLD. Not tomorrow, now. We'll be back. Well, we haven't forgotten about the January 6th political prisoners. We've been talking about them since, January 6th. Because we talk all the time in this nation about political prisoners in other places. Oh, I can't believe Vladimir Putin we've got them here too in this country. You live in that same kind of country now, and we were talking about them before it got convenient and popular. Joining me now is somebody who's been actually fighting for them, my friend Marina Medvin. She is a senior trial attorney and owner of Medvin Law, and she's also involved in these cases, obviously going to be very limited about things she can or cannot say. Marina, I understand you have to use some discretion. You're the lawyer, I'm the idiot, so I'll leave it up to you. But what can you tell me about the way these people have been treated by the justice system here in the land of the free?
Well, I'll tell you that my memorandums of sentencing show significant disparities between how these individuals have been treated and how protesters on the left have been treated. And so we've got disparities between the Portland protesters and Seattle protesters, Washington, D.C. protesters, Minnesota protesters, and these guys. And there's no one, if you look at sentencings across the country, across all times in the United States, there's no one who compares to the January 6th cases. And I've argued that actually the Department of Justice created such an environment where there's no cases to compare them to by omission in prosecutions in other cases and the decision to prosecute these guys. And so they created this area where we can't compare them to anyone. You know, there were over 1,000 people arrested during the Kavanaugh protesters who were on Capitol grounds committing similar offenses, over 1,000 people. Out of them, a single person was federally prosecuted. And you know what he did to get prosecuted? He jumped up on the chair inside the Senate gallery and somehow jumped on a person, so assaulting that person, running amok, interrupting proceedings that were going on. And he was prosecuted for a misdemeanor offense. And that's the only one out of the over 1,000 who were arrested to actually have been prosecuted. So what happened to the others? What happened when they were arrested? The charges were dismissed. They were charged under local D.C. code sections, and we have a post and forfeit disposition locally, which means the charges are dismissed if you post a $50 fee. So you post $50 and you're done. It's not a conviction, doesn't stay on your record, nothing.
Marina, can you, I'm going to say the lamest thing in the world, and I know it's lame. Like I can already tell the lameness that's about to come out of my mouth, but none of this seems legal. That shouldn't be legal. And I know that's pathetic, but it's true. How do you treat these people differently just because they're Republicans than you treated the other people you just talked about? Even if we have the worst people in charge, that shouldn't be legal.
The judges have been allowing the prosecutions to move forward, and they've been sentencing the defendants accordingly. The sentences are also interesting. You'll see disparities in sentencings between the judges. You'll see very short periods of probation and a fine. So Jenny Cudd, for example, she had 2 months of probation and a fine as her sentence. She started out with a felony that was dismissed and sentenced on a single misdemeanor charge. And then you'll see sentencings on just misdemeanor offenses and in other cases with other judges. And you'll see sentences of 60 days in jail for trespass. You'll see very long periods of probation for trespass. That's the underlying offense here is trespass in that building. These people weren't committing crimes. Like Jenny Cudd, for example, since you have her up right now, while in the building, she was within the red velvet robes. She joined a prayer circle. She asked someone not to break anything. These aren't vicious protesters. These aren't people deserving of prosecution, but they were prosecuted and sentenced. Many of them have been.
How have they been treated while they're in the jail system?
The jail system. Let's talk about the arrests, because the jail, I don't have a single client who is incarcerated, and so I can't tell you from personal experience. I know anecdotally, and I know from other lawyers how they feel their clients have been treated, but I don't want to speak to that personally. Personally, I'll speak to how they've been arrested. I'll tell you, I had a client who was in his 60s. Johnny Anderson is his name. He's now deceased, unfortunately. He's not with us anymore. Johnny Anderson was in the tunnel area. He walked up to law enforcement screaming for help. He couldn't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. There's gas sprayed directly at Johnny Anderson. And law enforcement actually brought him inside the Capitol to render medical aid. They saved his life. He was always very grateful to them for saving his life. They rendered medical aid, and he was then released for trespassing a local D.C. charge at that point. But later, he was charged federally in the feds. They charged him for stealing a police shield and for assaulting law enforcement. We were so confused. well, why was he charged and arrested for these things? I mean, he was released by police with a citation. Like, none of this made sense. The charges were concocted later, and we were getting ready for trial before he passed away to prove his innocence. But how did they arrest him? This was interesting. He was at a morning exercise routine with his wife, 5 a.m. He's just walking, and he gets thrown face down on the ground, his wife recalls, by law enforcement to arrest him. This is after I was involved in the case and said that in the event that you choose to arrest him, let me know and I'll turn him in. And normally, defense lawyers and the government have a good relationship and we're able to accommodate turn in. And we didn't have that opportunity here, even though we should have. He's not a flight risk. He's not a danger. There was no need to throw him face down. An older man in the 60s, a sick man. There's no need to do that. But they did. They threw him down at 5 a.m. Jenny Cudd, for example, she was initially arrested for misdemeanor charges. They came into a flower shop, and this place is adorned in all red, pink flowers, purple walls, a unicorn on the wall, a large teddy bear with a red bow on him, a pink teddy bear. And you've got a bunch of SWAT team members coming in with rifles and two canines. And out comes this woman, what did I do? What do you want of me, right? They arrest or question her in front of this teddy bear. I'll never forget those images. Then did that need to happen? It was a misdemeanor charge. Why would you need to send these people in a misdemeanor trespass charge? Why does this need to happen? Someone like her would have definitely turned herself in if you wanted her to explain her situation to be in court. None of these people need this. It's unnecessary, but it happened to these unfortunate individuals.
Well, everyone knows why it happened. Oh. No, go ahead. Go. I want to hear it.
Rabbi Michael Stepakov, a rabbi, walked in the Capitol. I think he was there for the shortest amount of time, about 5 minutes. He shook hands with a police officer and said, thank you for your service. And he walked out. He was arrested. His house was ransacked. And as this is happening, and then this is what's interesting about the rabbi, because I was shocked reading this, but of course he would, because he's such a nice guy. He thanked the officers who were going through his home, were executing a search warrant. He thanked them for their service. He thanked them for their service. He's so polite and so kind. And this man was in the Capitol for 5 minutes, and he shook hands with an officer, and he was sentenced to home detention. No matter what arguments we put forward, none of that resonated with the judge. It was the fact that he was involved with this entry to the Capitol, and that was enough for this nice, kind man, a leader in his community, to be sentenced to home confinement on that charge, home detention. But still, it's very unusual sentences for these cases, incomparable to the Antifa cases where their charges are being dismissed. One of the things I've been doing in sentencing is actually taking pleadings out of the other cases in Portland and in Seattle, Minnesota, and putting them as exhibits into my sentencing memorandum to show the disparity in the language the government uses to describe the protests. Because in order to describe the BLM protests, the government calls them reasonable, and there's a variety of words we put in. I'm sorry, I don't recall offhand. We'd have to read through the memos that I put in. But they put words that are very favorable to the movement. And when describing the January 6th protests, it's the opposite. It's very derogatory language. It's a criminalized behavior, even though it's still a protest. Is it a protest that got out of hand? Sure, but it's still a protest. And the people who were there to protest, the same as the BLM movements. And the government uses completely opposing words to describe the two. And in one interesting case in Minnesota, while describing a homicide, a BLM protester poured fuel on a shop and lit it on fire. And inside of that shop was another man. I believe he was also a protester or one of the individuals trying to steal in the middle of a protest, whatever he was part of that group. And he died in that fire. And so it was a homicide, arson. And the government, in the sentencing memorandum, said that the individual who set the fire, who was, by the way, a convicted felon on probation at the time for another crime, that he was simply speaking in the voice of the unheard. And they asked for half the guideline sentence because it was excusable, even though he had a criminal history and he was on probation at the time. And there was a death, but it's the voice of the unheard. And they quoted MLK twice in that sentencing memorandum. And when speaking about our clients, like the rabbi walked in and shook hands with a police officer who thanked law enforcement for searching his home and doing their jobs. That individual did not receive any such commentary in his sentencing memorandum from the government. They wanted for him to serve 14 days in jail. The judge didn't give him that, but that's what the government asked for. But it shows you the discrepancy in how the government is seeking to sentence these individuals. In Portland, a bunch of individuals who had felony assaults on law enforcement, their charges were dismissed with community service, just flat out dismissed. We don't have anyone like that in the January 6th group. They were doing community service for dismissal, people with criminal records. Here, you'll have people without criminal records who are not given the opportunity for dismissal, period. And so the offers, the plea offers, the dismissals, it's completely disparate treatment. And I've outlined this in a lot of memos in these cases, but you know, some judges are able or willing to listen, and you'll see that in the way that they sentence the defendants, and others feel the comparisons fall flat, as one judge stated to me, the comparison falls flat. And so they don't believe that the cases are comparable. And so there is a disagreement with the bench and the defense attorneys as to how the cases do compare.
Marina, I know a lot of these people, they're not wealthy people. These legal fees have broken them. Is there a way, a trusted way, because I trust you, is there a trusted place where people, if they want, can give to help these people out with this legal defense?
So there are different ways in which people can help. And I'll start with saying that not just my clients, I'm a private defense attorney, and most individuals who hire can afford. Some can, and we'll talk about that in a second, but a lot of people need counsel who have court-appointed lawyers. Those organizations raising money for them, those individuals, for whatever reason, are not able to get the funds from the organizations raising money for them. So a lot have set up individual GoFundMe pages. And that's a good place to go. I read a GoFundMe page recently where a woman had to, she's retired, had to go back to work to support her son, who can't work for 2 years because he's a J6 defendant, and she's seeking money to hire private counsel for him. So people like that. So there are people out there, you could donate directly to the individuals and help their families and help them get private counsel. For individuals working with lawyers like myself, we actually started pairing with the Coolidge Reagan Foundation. They started rightdefense.org. And there's a couple of cases. Rightdefense.org is only taking on a limited number of cases. Right now, they've taken up the January 6th case of Mark Ibrahim, an off-duty DEA agent. And Mark Ibrahim and I have been working on this case for about a year now. Before that, he spent a year litigating as well with another attorney. And right now, the case is in the Court of Appeals on an interlocutory appeal, a complicated issue. I won't go into that for now. But rightdefense.org is helping him raise funds to pay his legal fees. And he's an individual who's charged for a variety of offenses, felony offenses, because as an off-duty officer, he was armed per regulations. And the government said you can't be armed on Capitol grounds. Now, he never went inside the building. So we're talking about the grounds, the area, the few blocks surrounding the Capitol building. He was in that area. You can't be on the grounds armed. And he's charged with a variety of offenses for that, even though he was following department protocols on being armed and available for off duty. That's exactly what his regulations say. We put in a variety of memorandums that we filed in the case. That's available to review for anyone who wishes to make a donation to help him with legal fees. So that's one individual whose legal fees are going through the Coolidge Reagan Foundation, a trusted entity. And everyone working for Coolidge Reagan is not taking any cuts of anything donated. 100% of proceeds go to, well, not just proceeds, 100% of everything donated goes directly to legal fees for Mark Ibrahim. Because one of the things people don't realize, when you donate to an organization, you're donating to fund the people working in the organization. They get a salary, and they get fees taken out, expenses, and then there's a portion that remains that's supposed to go to whoever it is you think you're donating to. And what Coolidge Reagan is doing is anyone associated with Coolidge Reagan is not taking a penny. The only money that's expended on anything is credit card fees, which you can cover as well. The money goes directly to legal fees. It's a very direct donation. So just like donating directly to an individual, the money goes to that person here. It's going exactly into their legal fees, not for anything other than legal fees, specifically to that.
Marina, you were the best. Come back soon. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. I don't think I've ever apologized. You know I don't apologize, right? I'm going to apologize for something on Lighten the Mood. Next, before we get to that, it's very serious. Before we get to that, let's do talk about something that actually is serious. Let's talk about putting yourself back together again once combat has changed you. And it's very, very difficult to do because you leave combat, you come home from Iraq, Afghanistan, and all the people in your life, even the ones who love you the most, this is not their fault, none of them understand what you're going through. So none of them can really help you go through it. They just, you're back home and you kind of look the same as you did before, so why don't you just snap out of it and come back? It doesn't work like that, man. You need help. These guys need help to come home. I love Boulder Crest because they're helping them come home. These guys come home and they need put back together again so they can move on and be husbands and fathers and productive members of society. Boulder Crest is doing that for them. And we have to help Boulder Crest do it. It's called Operation Struggle. Go to bouldercrest.org and give what you can, all right? Bouldercrest.org. We'll be back. You know what I love? Making fun of people. Hold on. Making fun of communists, right? What's more fun than making fun of communists? What would be better to lighten the mood than to make fun of communists? Remember, always mock communists, including friends and family members of yours. In fact, it's better if you mock them right to their stupid faces, because they're so used to getting out there with their insanity and ruining Thanksgiving. Oh, I love abortion! It's time for you to start making these people feel as stupid and worthless as they really are. And that's what we're all about here on I'm Right. Before we get to that, let's get to this. I don't know why dogs do what they do to us. I don't know why we love them so much, but we do. We do. And dogs have problems. Dogs have health issues. They can't talk to us, sadly, as much as it looks like they try. Dogs get older and their joints start to hurt. They don't complain. They just stop moving around as much. Can't jump up on the couch anymore. Not that they should. The coat starts to fade away. Maybe they get a little too lethargic or too hyperactive. Their eyes go. Well, why does that happen? Dogs don't ever get nutrition. The dog food, there's nothing in it. It's dead. Your dog food, too. The dog food I give my dog, it's dead. Give your dog Rough Greens, man. It's all natural. Oh, the vitamins, minerals, omega oils. You want those issues to go away? Lower vet bills? A longer living puppy? Go to Rough Greens. RoughGreens.com/Jesse gives you a free jumpstart trial bag. Give it to your dog and watch the difference. RoughGreens.com/Jesse. All right. CNN put out an article saying, quote, if you're white and you've posted a GIF or a meme of a black person to express a strong emotion, you may be guilty of wearing digital blackface. Well, I know, as you know, we don't apologize here on this show, and I'm right. We do not apologize ever. The communists will only use your apology against you. You don't apologize to people who aren't arguing with you in good faith. But this is going to be a first time on the show. I owe everybody an apology, because I actually responded to that with a picture of the black civil rights leader in America. And I just want to tell you, I feel bad about it, all right? I'll see you tomorrow.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.